And finally, into Northern Ireland, a rather cloudy sort of day with a little bit of rain, especially around the middle part of the day. That should tend to ease off. It'll brighten up into the second part of the day, but still a few sharp showers into the evening and 18 degrees in Belfast.
Thank you, Jane. Well, now on Radio 4, we begin a new book of the week. For as long as people have been migrating to London, so has their music. The journalist Lloyd Bradley's Sounds Like London explores the evolution of black music in the capital and tells the stories of some of its key performers. Today, Calypso. The reader is Ben Onwukwe.
When Calypsonian Lord Kitchener stepped from the gangplank of the SS Empire Windrush at Tilbury on the 22nd of June 1948, he barely had a chance to feel Mother England beneath his feet before a microphone was shoved into his face. Never one to pass up an opportunity, Kitch, unaccompanied and apparently ad-libbing, broke into song.
London is the place for me. London, this lovely city. You can go to France or America, India, Asia or Australia, but you must come back to London City.
It was captured by Pathé News, and his cheerful, assured performance is still dusted off as an easy encapsulation of the start of mass immigration from the Caribbean into the UK. Not entirely the carefree spur-of-the-moment songster he might seem, Kitch was already a big star in the Caribbean, and had written the song during the four-week voyage for exactly this moment. Kitch and fellow Trinidadian Lord Beginner made a decision to pay the £28 passage because there was a healthy African-Caribbean music scene in London, and they could find a relatively wealthy black audience. As a symbol of musical immigration into the UK, however, Kitch's quayside concert is priceless. This wasn't simply music performed and consumed in Britain, by immigrants and reverent aficionados, it was music that was adapted to fit its new setting and found itself in a creative environment that was prepared to make efforts to accommodate it. Calypso comes from the word kaizo, an exclamation of encouragement in the Hausa language, widely spoken in West Africa. It meant go on, continue. Plantation slaves were forbidden to speak to each other in the fields and communicated by singing, would shout it to each other as mutual support. Kaizo-based music was prevalent throughout the West Indies, but became known as Calypso in Trinidad because, so legend has it, Europeans on that island wouldn't make the effort to pronounce the word properly. By the time the Windrush docked, Calypso was already popular enough in London to offer all sorts of opportunities. For Lord Kitchener and Lord Beginner, it was more a case of how soon would a gig find them than how soon would they find a gig. They were celebrated artists all over the Caribbean, and it was not unusual for a star of Kitch's calibre to dash around the West End playing sets in three or four clubs in a single night. Almost exclusively experienced live, Calypso functioned much like Kaizo, secretly mocking those in power. The sharper wordsmiths would comment on London life and London people with in-jokes and slang, that kept things pretty much closed off from anyone apart from themselves and their own crowds. While every bit as exciting and ad hoc as you might find in Port of Spain, this was pretty much the original Caribbean form, frozen in aspic, with very little evolution. By the time the Windrush arrived, most Calypso recording was happening on a below-the-radar scene, which put Kitch and Beginner in the studio almost as soon as they arrived. Both cut tunes for London's most successful Calypso label, Hummingbird Records, run by expat Trinidadian businessman Renko Simmons. Back home, he retailed his records through a chain of tailors' shops. In London, he'd placed them in the network of black-owned grocers, cafes and barbers. While this enhanced reputations in Trinidad and catered to West Indian London, it had no wider impact. That all changed when Dennis Preston, a suave, charismatic hipster who had been on the London jazz scene since the early 1940s, discovered Calypso. He happened upon it in 1946 when, as jazz editor of Musical Express, he was promoting a ragtime concert in London. Freddie Grant and his West Indian Calypsonians were halfway down the bill. 3 years later, while working for Decca in New York, Preston came across the music again as a favourite of the dance bands in Harlem clubs. Seriously impressed, he convinced EMI's Parlophone Records to get into the calypso business and took Kitsch and Beginner into the company's prestigious Abbey Road Studios early in 1950. At much the same time, EMI chanced upon another lucrative sales opportunity for calypso, the UK mainstream pop market. Not the London version, though. The major labels opted for American calypso, made in America by Americans. Make Trinidad like paradise, dream. As a mainstream-friendly fad, calypso kicked off in the States when Trinidad-stationed US servicemen brought it home after the war. The biggest US pop hit of 1945, the Andrews Sisters' Rum and Coca-Cola, was a plagiarized version of a Trinidadian hit, despite being banned by some radio networks because it mentioned an alcoholic beverage, not because it's actually a song about prostitution. The record sold 2.5 million copies. Drinking rum and Coca-Cola, go down Point Cumana, both mother and daughter, working for the Yankee dollar. But by 1956, with the appearance of Elvis Presley on the Milton Berle show in front of 40 million viewers, interest began to wane, and lilting Caribbean rhythms were no longer quite cutting it with the kids. Record companies pulled out as soon as sales pulled, and it fell to London's thriving independent record labels to take up where they left off. Emile Chalet, an immigrant of indeterminate Eastern European origin, seized this moment to move to the forefront of the calypso market. A character so colourful he deserves his own paint box, Emile Chalet had arrived in London just after the war. He claimed to have been an Allied spy, and that the start-up capital with which he founded Melodisc Records in 1947 was a payoff for his clandestine services. Sure of his ability to go anywhere and get on with anybody, Chalet moved among the subcultures of London and seemed innately to understand what they wanted. His small record company was agile enough to shift from style to style on no more than his say-so. The Melodisc style brought calypso right into the modern era, giving it an edge that impressed jazz fans while making the Caribbean music sound familiar enough for broad appeal. One of the most significant developments was a shift in lyrical approach. While EMI Parlophone's output had been witty and undoubtedly of Caribbean descent, the songs tended to come at things from as all-embracing a perspective as possible. Lord Beginner's Housewives focused on the problems of rationing and stretching a housekeeping budget. Kitsch's My Landlady bemoaned interfering proprietors, and Young Tiger's I Was There at the Coronation rhapsodized Queen Elizabeth's coronation parade. Her Majesty looked really divine in her crimson robe, furred with her mind. The Duke of Edinburgh, dignified and neat, sat beside her as Admiral of the fleet. He was there at the coronation. I was there. Increasingly, the next wave of calypsos supplemented the sophisticated arrangements with more raucous and colloquial vocals. And of course, the bawdiness factor was ratcheted up. Innuendo was something of an art form. Caribbean dancehall crowds loved a lewd lyric. Melodisc put out such risque gems as My Wife's Nighty and The Big Instrument. But pride of place went to Kitsch's double entendre-laden Saxophone No. 2. The BBC was moved to sticker a selection of discs in their library with the stark warning, Do not play this record. While Mari Bryant's 1954 Melodisc hit Don't Touch Me Nylon, a song about statically charged underwear, prompted questions in the house. Not surprisingly, with troublesome mothers-in-law and bedroom transgressions being the same for everyone, the saucier strand of London calypsos captured a sizable domestic audience. West End aristocrats had also adopted calypso. At Tony establishments like the Café Royal and the Embassy Club, calypso performers became regulars, and they were also in demand for Deb Balls and Oxbridge Bashers. The music made its mark on the royal family too, with an incident involving the Duke of Edinburgh and Calypsonian young Tiger at Mayfair's Orchid Room. When the singer spotted the future Prince Philip, who was engaged to then Princess Elizabeth, he substituted the lyrics of Rum and Coca-Cola with some that discussed upcoming nuptials in a less than totally reverent manner. The horrified club manager apologized from the stage and gave Tiger a thorough dressing down. The next night, however, a much larger royal party turned up with one request. Sing it again, man! With such support, Calypso soon staked a serious claim on the BBC. There, as the colony's most fully formed musical expression, it was a shoo-in when exotic music and dance was called for. Calypso's earliest regular showing was on the hour-long Friday night variety show Kaleidoscope, transmitted from 1946 until 1953. Calypsonians would feature amid the antiques experts on Collector's Corner, the Amazing Memory Man, and the Whodunit drama segment. In the early 1960s, with television satire and comedy becoming ever more biting, it was almost unthinkable not to include a humorously scathing calypso in the mix. The most vividly remembered example formed part of the BBC's That Was the Week That Was, which was groundbreaking in its merciless lampooning of political and establishment figures. Peter Cook, Dennis Potter, and several future Pythons were on the team, and so too was Lance Percival. A middle-class white lad from Kent, Percival had spent the mid-1950s in Canada, where he'd achieved fame singing calypsos as Lord Lance, laid-back calypso style from the neck down, monocle and top hat above.
There was a mama and a papa and a boy who was grown, who wanted to marry and have wife of his own. He met a young girl who suited him nice. He went to his papa to ask his advice. His papa said, son, I have to say no. That girl is your sister, but your mama don't know.
His singing was top class, and Trinidadian Calypsonians still talk with reverence about his lyrical talents. Percival's role on That Was the Week That was to take suggestions shouted from the audience, usually concerning current events, and make up and sing a calypso. When TW3 was giving Calypso its largest British audience, however, the music had ceased to count as a pop style. By the end of the 1950s, rock and roll had pretty much swept away everything in its path. When Lance Percival was doing his thing, the Beatles had released three albums and the Supremes were spearheading the arrival of Motown on British shores. Even though it ceased to have much sway beyond specialist circles, London Calypso did not die out. The London Calypso tent at the Notting Hill Carnival and the Junior Calypso competitions held during Black History Month remain lively affairs. While calypso may not have made as deep an impression as reggae or funk, the fact that it established itself as part of mainstream British entertainment marked a historic cultural moment. It represented the first time in the UK that an immigrant group had expressed a relationship with its new home in song and developed a style that had absorbed that environment. For the first time, too, an imported musical style made a significant impact on the domestic music industry. Ever since, Londoners have shown a consistent appetite for imported music, provided it has some meaning and substance.
Ben Onwukwe was reading Sounds Like London by Lloyd Bradley. The book is abridged by Natalie Steed and produced by Kirstine Cameron. Thank you. This is BBC Radio 4. Now here's the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 today, Tuesday, the 13th of August. There are warnings of gales in South Itsira, Fisher and Fitzroy. The general synopsis at 1800. Low southern Sweden, 1000, slow moving, filling 1004 by 1800 Tuesday. Low Spain, 1008, slow moving, filling 1010 by same time. High Seoul, 1025, dissipating. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. West Viking, northwesterly 4 or 5, showers, good. East Viking, North Utsira, northwesterly 5 to 7, showers, mainly good. South Utsira, northwesterly 6 to gale 8, rain or thundery showers, good, occasionally moderate.